Hi there. Welcome to The Preventable, the podcast giving you a seat at the table with conversations about the intersection of alcohol, drugs, and mental health in everyday lives. Take a seat and join us.
Welcome to The Preventable. With me today is an old friend of PreventEd, the organization, and kind of a legend in his own right, I would say, Mr. Joe Yancey. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Nicole. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for having me.
You are welcome. I want to dive into what you're doing now, but before we do that, I want to sort of get into your origin story, if you will.
Sure.
So you were CEO of Places for People for a long time, right?
Yeah. For about 12 years.
That's a long time.
You know, I was had the fortune of actually, when I came to St. Louis, actually beginning at Places for People back in the late 1970s, and spent several years as a in leadership with the Department of Mental Health, and then was fortunate enough to finish my career, I guess, at Places for People.
Yeah. What is Places for People for those people who aren't sure?
Sure. So Places for People is a community mental health center. It's actually a certified community behavioral health organization in that designation now. And its focus has always been in terms of really serving those individuals who are least likely to present on their own, mm-hmm. and those that had some of the most challenging kind of treatment profiles. And so that was kind of our niche. A
so
lot
really
of work
like
with homeless
where,
and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's like where like the homeless population meets like mental health disorders, diagnosed or not, and then some substance use disorder, and then just it's like that. It's like the hardest population potentially, in my view anyway. Like you were the ones who were reaching those folks.
Exactly. That was a commitment that I made and reminded our staff of on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So have you always been interested in this field? I mean, you mentioned that during the 70s you first went to Places for People. I mean, did you know that you wanted to be in this field growing up?
That's a good question. No, I did not know I wanted to be in this field growing up. I will say that my mother had a pretty major mental illness. Mm. I didn't really recognize it at that time, and that was not the reason, really, I got into this line of work. I grew up a child of the civil rights movement, mm-hmm. and my main focus early in life was really in that and social justice.
Interesting.
And so the social justice piece continued throughout my life, and I saw mental health disorders, people, you know, and substance use disorders, and how they're funded, how they take such a subjugated position to physical health.
Mm.
And to me, all that was social justice. So I did not feel I was changing at all my priorities, just with more of a focus on people with behavioral health disorders.
Well, and I know for years, when I first came to the organization, you gave a presentation to our staff as part of professional development, sort of on housing in the St. Louis region, on the inequities with different types of built environments. And then we've invited you back at several times to even talk about that kind of even more focused. So even though, you know, you were working at Places for People, we still always have kind of looked at you as somebody who does speak on behalf of social justice and equity, really.
Yeah, it's it's always been important to me that fairness, mm-hmm. and that everybody really should have the opportunity to live the healthiest in life that they can and to reach their highest potential. And those things that I came and talked to you guys about, and some of the systemic kinds of policies and laws and what have you over history, and how they tended to subjugate people of color, absolutely is a part of all of that, really.
Yeah.
And so the work now is similar to that in terms of when we have just huge disparities based on race, then, you know, it should be random.
Yeah, right.
We should not be able to predict.
Correct.
But we know that we can predict.
So, to me, it's almost like you've been, and I hope this isn't speaking out of turn, but you've been talking a lot about these things before anyone else was talking about them.
Yeah.
Has it felt like that to you too?
I do feel that way, certainly in the behavioral health space mm-hmm. in particular.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody should have the same ability to access.
Yeah, and to your point, we shouldn't be able to predict.
Right, right, exactly.
Morbidity and mortality and disastrous life things. We shouldn't be able to predict those based on your zip code or what school you go to. And in many areas, St. Louis being one of them, you can predict some of that.
Yeah, you can predict almost most of it.
I know. I was trying to be positive today.
Any health indicator or quality.
I was trying to be positive, Joe.
Quality of life indicator, you can pretty much predict it. So, I mean, and it's a constant. It's a long time that has been built over time. So it's going to take a while to change it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're undoing centuries, basically. And so that sort of leads us to the present day, where mm-hmm. you retire, quote unquote.
So supposedly.
Supposedly, yeah. You retire, and this is how I explain it. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you were set to retire, and then certain powers that be were like, not so fast. We want to listen to you. We want you to partner with us. And you said, well, I will come back only if you actually listen to me and will take steps to remedy what's been going on for centuries. So, okay, you're shaking your head. So that's how I kind of explain it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I was, you know, I was honored to be asked to help with this really extraordinarily tragic disproportionality of overdose fatalities when you look at them by race in our area. The fact that, you know, the door was being opened to potentially change some of a system that I've been kind of screaming and hollering about for years before I left Place for People. I was like, okay, yeah, no, that's it was going to need to be very, very different. We were going to have to be innovative and do things that had never been done before, and we were going to have to do all those things without a benchmark. Mm-hmm. What we have attempting to do has never been done before, so can't guarantee it's going to be successful. But what we do know as a fact is what we have done over the years has not proven
mm-hmm.
to have benefit.
So, correct.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about some of the initiatives that are happening really under your consultation and leadership. And, you know, one great example is Living with Purpose. You know, we had Cal and Duana here. They were one of our very first podcast guests.
Oh, yeah. Good.
And the way that their organization has truly evolved and become more equipped and developed more capacity to really meet the needs that they're seeing in their community in a very short period of time is pretty remarkable. And that's just one example.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I think, and I do want to talk about more initiatives. My question to you is, how do we make sure that we keep it going? Because so much relies and rests upon trust.
Yes.
And what we can't do, I mean, I recognize I'm a white woman. I have a lot of privilege as the executive director of a large organization, large-ish. It's large to me, but we're not the largest, you know. But I recognize the privilege we have, and I also recognize that sometimes when we try to help, that it's seen as maybe a savior complex or stay in your lane. And then also, like, how long is this going to last, right? Because there's been this academic, almost like we're going to go in and study this community, and then when our study runs out of money, then we're going to leave, and we're going to tell you all of the problems that are in your community.
Right.
So how do you make sure, as to the extent that you can, that these initiatives that are occurring have the trust of the community?
No, that's a great question. And that's why, Nicole, one of the very first messages was that if this is going to be done, it has to be done from the inside out. We have tried it. You have worked for years from the outside in. It has not been effective. And to answer, try to answer both of your questions, if I could, at the same time. The fact of the matter is what we worked to do was identify places like living in purpose that are in the community mm-hmm. that are doing work. First off, recognize we've got a big problem. Mm-hmm. People are dying. They're dying on a crazily disproportionate rate in here in St. Louis in particular.
Sir. Mm.
So given that, how do we build a public health infrastructure around not just opioid fatalities or overdose fatalities, but health in general?
In general.
Because that's what's missing. And if you do that, then the community trusts you because it's them. It's not somebody from the outside. So the idea was that there are people in our community that are working very, very hard because they care and they love the people they live with.
Mm-hmm.
And they can see the hurt. They can see what's going on. So that trust is already there. We don't have to build that. What we have to do is build them. We have to build them. So the whole concept was based on three principles. First, invest in and build capacity of. And third is to empower community and community organizations that are already doing this work and are already trusted in their community. People are coming to them for other things. Let's make that kind of a center around how we try to reach people. Because right now, that system as it is not reaching people clearly.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to do it a different way.
And so,
and I'll just real quickly say that in terms of sustainability of such a model is going to obviously require more than the Department of Mental Health.
Absolutely.
It's going to require jurisdictions. I think hospital systems, managed care organizations are about to pull in thousands of people that heretofore have not had access to health care.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, we can build on this kind of community infrastructure, public health community infrastructure we're trying to build in around opioid fatalities, but you can ride that around health in general.
So pretend I'm just a regular old person. How do you know it's working, Joe? I mean, this is my taxpayer dollars. How do we know it's working?
That is a great question, and one that certainly has come. And at this point, what we could tell you is we've got energized, incredibly collaborative relationships between the
More
five
than
organizations.
I've ever seen, by the way.
Yeah, thank
collaboration
you.
Collaboration in general, but especially collaboration between those five organizations. And then it's the network that seems so strong.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, and they're sharing and they're looking at, well, how can we, you know, maybe come together to get more additional resources than we have now and those kinds of things. And we are connecting, they are connecting people to the treatment system. We have to work on that system as well, though, so that they are ready and people not only get there, but they're able to retain people.
Correct.
Which is another big piece around recovery, right? And
yes.
Treatment and recovery.
Which requires a lot of advocacy work, right? Changing some of the laws that are on the books about how many people can be in a treatment facility at one time, how long they can stay, all of that.
Yes.
So what keeps you going? I mean, you've been doing this for a long time. You've been talking, even sometimes, I'm sure, when it feels like no one's listening. So what keeps you going?
I see this as my calling. Nicole, to be honest with you, I mean, I've really done this kind of work all my life. And again, I really see this work as social justice work. So it's not like I jumped off into something different. I've been passionate about this issue all of my life. And I've worked hard to try to make changes. And, You know, I really see, and I tell people when they ask me this sometimes, they say, boy, you know, there's just things don't change quickly. Things, and I go, I understand that. But the way that I see it is, you know, I'd like to see myself and others that do this work as standing on the shoulders of so many, many that came before and laying our plank into a ship that it we may never possibly, we may not see sail, but that we firmly believe will someday set sail.
You are, I think, kind of an imposing figure, like because of your reputation and because of the megaphone that you use, but you're also very humble and you're very inclusive of recognizing the other people who are also part of the work. That's not a question. It's just a statement. So thank you for that.
I think you get a lot more work done in from the background than you do from out front.
I actually could not agree more. I think we're very similar in that respect. So what are you excited about? We mentioned Living with Purpose. We know that there's four other initiatives going on. What excites you that you're seeing right now happening? Or well, four other organizations within that initiative?
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I'm seeing our provider community come together like I've never seen them come together before. And that includes not only treatment providers, but recovery support providers. Prevent Ed has been an amazing partner from the very beginning.
He didn't pay you to say that.
You did not pay me to say that. But from the very beginning, it was like, what can we do? And it was also very much... you know, we're here and we're ready to roll. Mm-hmm. And I was like, guys, you know, what we want to do is really build that capacity in community. And you said, that's okay. We don't have to necessarily take the lead with this. We can go in and help prepare community, train community, help community to be able to be better prepared to kind of deliver these messages as well.
Yeah, I think for so long we thought that if we weren't the voice, that our voice would get lost. And that's not that that wasn't anyone's fault, but it's just like, you know, how can we get our piece of the pie? How can we get on the news? How can we whatever? And like, it's not always about us. Right. And so how can sometimes we just provide that support so that other people can do it, particularly when the message will be received better? Because the message is the same, but the messenger matters. It does. The messenger matters.
Yes, it does. And and so, you know, I that's what's got me excited right now. I mean, there's a obviously there's a ton of barriers.
Yeah.
I'm also excited about the fact that I think that I do believe that we can bring more people into this with their resources.
Yep.
Because it's going to take a significant amount of resources to make this change.
Can't support this in and of itself. There has to be more, including more corporate and private folks.
Yeah. I think we got a good story. I think we got a good conceptual foundation. I think we demonstrated to some extent a theory of change. So it's
the
not
public health nerd in me is like geeking out right now. I love a good theory of change.
Yeah. So we're not moving into these other realms with an empty quiver.
Mm-hmm. On that note, we're gonna leave it. You are welcome back anytime. Maybe even next time have you back with some of the groups that you're working with and we kind of report back.
They'd love that.
Awesome.
That would be fantastic.
Thank you so much for joining us today. If you like this conversation with Joe, if you want more, please consider rating, reviewing, and subscribing to The Preventable. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for joining us at The Preventable, brought to you ad-free by Prevent Ed. Prevent Ed works to reduce or prevent the harms of alcohol and other drug use through education, intervention, and advocacy. Please visit their website at prevented.org. Like what you heard? Rate, review, and subscribe to stay up to date with what we are serving on The Preventable.